sort of disorganized orderliness. I appreciate my fellow task force members, and I appreciate the indulgence of my fellow council members too. I just want to be on record that I'm not exceptionally happy with the changes that we're proposing tonight, but I do, in good faith, believe that we will continue on this path and we will make more changes later. Thank you.
Thank you. Christopher, I also want to thank you for bringing forward some of the comments of the many letters.
And that was Christopher Crone in March of 1999, saying how much confidence and hope he had in the council because it was such a good step forward in terms of a good faith effort, that even though he wasn't terribly happy with everything, he was ready to proceed in the hope that all was going to be changed, particularly with his homeless issues task force that he got them to vote in. And actually, the original charge of the homeless issues task force was to find safe places to sleep as a primary goal, something it promptly ignored and never went into in any significant way, although it did suggest removing the entire camping ban while it was looking for that kind of sanctuary, because people have to sleep while you're dealing with these issues. And Crone never came out with public statements again that favored the right to sleep, that favored... he voted for safe sleeping zones when it was done as a block with Sugar Fitzmaurice and initially with Byers, but Byers deserted that, and when Byers ran, Crone ran too. And even though he now has the votes on the council to get something out of this situation, he won't even bring it up. It is really a sad situation. And we're going to play his recent comments on this in a moment. You can get the contrast between then and now. But first, this.
Do it with the chords there. If you want higher wages, here's what you gotta do. Gotta talk to the workers in the shop with you. Gotta build you a union, gotta make it strong. If you all stick together, folks, won't be long. You get shorter hours, better working conditions, vacations with pay, take your kids to the seashore. Well, it ain't quite this simple, so I'd better explain just why you got to ride on the union train. Cause if you wait for the boss to raise your pay, you'll all be waiting round till Judgment Day. You'll all be buried, gone to heaven. St. Peter will be the foreman then, folks. Well, you know you're underpaid, but the boss says you ain't, so he speeds up the work till you're about to faint. You may be down and out, but you ain't beaten. You can pass out a leaflet and call a meeting, talk it over, speak your mind, decide to do something about it. Of course, the boss may persuade some damn fool to come to your meeting and act like a stool, but you can always tell a stool, folks. That's a fact. He's got a coward streaker running down his back. He doesn't have to stool. Why, he'll always make a good living on what he steals at a street musician's guitar cases. Well, you got a union now and you're sitting pretty. Put some folks on the bargaining committee. The boss won't listen when one guy squawks, but he's got to listen when the union talks. He'd better be mighty lonely if everybody decided to walk out on him. Well, he's working you so hard, it's just outrageous, and he's paying you all starvation wages. You go to the boss, and the boss will yell, before I raise your pay, I'll see y'all in hell. He's chewing a big cigar, feeling mighty slick, because he thinks he's got your union lick. When he looks out the window, what does he see but 1,000 pickets, and they all agree he's a bastard, unfair slave driver. Now, folks, you've come to the hardest time. The boss will try to break your picket line. He'll call out the police and the National Guard. They'll tell you it's a crime to have a union card. They'll raid your meetings, beat you on the head, call every one of you goddamn red, unpatriotic agitators, bomb throwers, even the kids. But out in Detroit, here's we found. And out in Vancouver, here's we found. Down in Mexico City, here's we found. Right here in Boston, here's what we found. That if you don't let red baiting break you up, you don't let the vigilantes break you up, you don't let the stool pigeons break you up, and you don't let racism break you up, you'll win. What I mean is, take it easy, but take it.
David Rovick's Talking Union, and an old tune Pete Seeger used to sing that one. Free Radio Santa Cruz is what you're tuned to, 96.3 FM. I'm Bathrob Spear Robert Norris, and this is your Free Radio station, 427-3772. If you want to call in, 427-3772. We're up for your calls. Now, as promised, Christopher Crone, 2002. After stalling for several months, Crone got on to Talk About, finally, Michael Sammet's show. And I'd hoped to have a much longer analysis of Crone and to do this with Scott Graham, but Scott's been pretty busy and other things have intervened. So I'm going to play you simply Crone's response to a phone call on Talk About from Bernard Klitzner, a homeless activist with HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Crone did not bring up the issue of the sleeping ban at all, of course, wishing again to avoid it, bury it, sideline it, dismiss it, and so forth. But Bernard did, and you'll get to hear what he said. Compare his speaking now with what he said back in 1999.
You're on Talk About. Thanks for calling.
Sure.
Yeah.
Christopher, Bernard. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. When is the sleeping ban going to leave our town? If you agree, and I think you've told me, you know, that the sleeping ban is a human rights, you know, violation, I want to see you organize, you know, the progressive community, you know, to put an end to this terrible, terrible thing that's happening to homeless people every night. And I'm going to take my answer off the air, Christopher.
All right. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
You. Number here, 459-4036.
The caller, that's another issue that's been a long one in running in Santa Cruz, and it has to do with a 70s ordinance that outlawed camping. And as far as I know, a lot of cities, or even most cities, have some sort of ordinance prohibiting camping. And the issue that he's talking about can be seen through a human rights lens, and I would tend to agree with what he just said, but I also have been through the wars, as he knows, when I first got on the council, and we discussed the heck out of this, and we had a task force of council. We had a task force of council members, then we had a task force of citizens, who came up with, I think, some very, very good recommendations, only to see them shot down by the council.
Why?
And I feel like we've been down that road. I just want to respond to the caller, yeah. And then I'll respond to you, Mike. But I don't see the four votes there. That doesn't mean we should stop talking about the issue of homelessness and what the city is doing for and against the homeless. I think the city should be a catalyst. It's not going to, as I said before, feed everybody and clothe everybody, but I think the city can act as a catalyst and creating opportunities for people who are on hard times. Your question, Mike, was why?
Why don't you have the four votes? Or what is the counter argument to repealing it? I mean, how does that go? That people start to have more homeless hanging out all over the place?
I'll give you a really good example. We, you know, this group that started the Santa Cruz Service Corps, the way that got out to the public was that it was a group that was going to, very similar to California Conservation Corps, they camp near, as I understand it anyway, where they clean up areas. So the Service Corps was going to pitch a tent, say, for example, wasn't even approved, but it was out there at the depot site where we're going to have a park, but right now it's a sort of litter-strewn field with railroad tracks and stuff, and there's a liquor store there, and there's an old building there that's used by the Homeless Flower Collective. And all of a sudden, we started getting phone calls from the neighbors saying, oh my gosh, they're going to have a homeless encampment here, and people are going to be drinking every night and partying. And it just gets out of hand. So when you talk about not having, repealing the camping ordinance, people mythologize to some degree, and they think that somebody's going to be sleeping right on their front doorstep. So it becomes a sort of aberrated discussion, and it does take leadership, I think, to cut through that. And that's, you know, we need that leadership to cut through the camping issue right now. But I don't, as mayor, I don't see the four votes there to do that, and we have a slew of things on the agenda right now that I think that we can get a majority of council members to vote for.
All right, you want to talk about it. Thanks for calling.
Thanks.
And that was Mayor Crone, 2002. And, of course, it's interesting. He talks about aberrating the discussion. It's he himself, of course, is making the kinds of confusing muddlings that have screwed up the discussion in the past. The Camp Paradise issue was not really about the sleeping ban, although it was to some extent. It was really about the whole camping ban and the camping ordinance, that is to say, putting up tents, forming a protective community, even a place where you can cook and so forth. The issue that was that we have repeatedly discussed here on Free Radio, or I have anyway, and that has been the subject of two initiative attempts here in Santa Cruz in terms of a voters initiative, the subject of innumerable protests, is the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance. Those words that simply state, in essence, sleeping between the hours of 11 and 8:30 shall be illegal, and is illegal, on all public property. A preposterous notion, and one that simply invites harassment of homeless people and removes their status, puts them in a status of second-class citizens, because if you're engaging in criminal behavior, you can be searched and harassed and hassled by the police whenever and wherever. You have no civil rights once you're a suspect in a crime in the same way that an ordinary citizen does. You can be searched, you can be arrested, you can be directed to move here and there, you can be humiliated. And that is the condition that homeless people are in Santa Cruz, in the city limits, every night after 11 o'clock at night, if they are suspected of the crime of sleeping. Now, Crone muddies this by talking about the camping ban, which would be setting up a tent and so forth. Most homeless people don't set up tents. They don't have those resources, or they don't do it. It's too visible. Although they should be able to do it, and it's obviously a basic human need. But we were working, we are actually the great, you know, step-by-step plotters. I mean, I'm often denounced as a radical. This was not a radical move to say, end the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance. As you heard, all kinds of people agreed it should be done. The person who didn't agree was Catherine Byers back in 1999, and now Crone doesn't agree. And the reason he doesn't agree, you can say, well, he does agree, but he doesn't have the votes. That's not true. If he brought it forward, he would have potentially the votes, or he would have at least he would be in a position to seriously embarrass people like Kennedy, like Porter would be a vote on, and then in favor of that, like Fitzmaurice, like Riley, who have historically, Porter and Riley claim to be against the sleeping ban. They would have to justify, based on the research his group, the task force to examine the camping ordinance, and then his homeless issues task force that followed that group, the evidence that they amass that there is no magnet effect, that it is an essential reality, that it is a legal necessity as well. All these things have been well trod. They need a leader. Yes, they do. He's the mayor. He has to lead. And he has to lead on issues where he's done research. He sat on that committee, the task force to examine the camping ordinance. Of course, I'm wasting my breath by talking about this in terms of as though I were talking to him, because he's not interested. However, the community, I hope, and that means you, is interested, because it's a shame and a disgrace, and because also it puts pressure on people who are slumlording it up or working at wage slave jobs, because they realize that if they are forced outside, they're going to be in a position where they'll face harassment and tickets. It makes it more difficult for them. It makes it more likely that they have to kind of bow the heel there and bow the head to whatever is going on at the moment, that they have to make the kinds of arrangements that compromise their situation, that compromise their dignity. And you see this problem with Crone and his council in terms of rent control, in terms of community control of police, and all kinds of other issues. On the other hand, just to give you an example of a little more upbeat as to what we have possibly waiting in the wings in terms of folks who have spoken up strongly on this issue. At the same 1999 council meeting, we heard some other voices, voices from the public. I'm going to play now the oral communications section from that 1999 council meeting. This is actually before the camping ban amendments were discussed. And I'll remind you, those camping ban amendments were minor, the ones that came out of the task force, because they were, not just because they were vetoed by buyers, because there wasn't a minority report, because Sugar and Crone could have come up and should have come up with their own proposals independently and actually issued a report and lobbied for them. But they refused to do that because they were seduced by the idea of the great consensus, of getting the votes later, of winning the 2000 election. Of course, after they won the 2000 election, they still didn't bring it up, and it's now going into 2002, and it's not been brought up. That's the dangerous seduction of power. Let's hear, however, what the people had to say.
On the rest of the evening agenda.
Right. Hi, okay. My name is James Nay, and what I'd like to address is the fact that this city does not have a shelter for families and children. We have many shelters for addicts, for alcoholics, for singles looking for a place to go, but where do the families go? Why do we have children in our streets? Now, I don't know any other town that doesn't have a family shelter. And I put it to this board that I think it's time to look at that and time to bring it to the front and do something about children on the street, because they're next year's population. And you don't do it now, what's this world going to come to? Thank you, ma'am.
Thanks, James.
Before we get to the findings of the task force on the homeless.
Do you introduce yourself, or maybe you did, Steve? I'm not sure.
My name is Steve Argue, and I want to just mention the fact that a whole number of people have been brutally beaten recently in Santa Cruz here because of the fact that they were sleeping outside, and there's been such a climate of hatred fostered through the corporate media, through the police, through the city government against homeless people here, speaking of them as they're not citizens, and all these other ridiculous types of things that we've heard come out of the city council in terms of the way this discussion has been defined. These attacks have included an elderly woman who was assaulted, old men in their sleeping bags, another man who was hit by a 2x4, attacked to another that was hit by a 2x4 in his stomach, and was told to leave town or else they'd kill him. And I think this is an atmosphere that has been fostered by the sleeping ban itself, and we'll be taking that up. It's also fostered by a situation in which the poverty is rampant in America and deepening as a result of government policies that promote a system of profit and wealth before human needs. And we have a situation right now where larger and larger numbers of people are in the street, and we have people scapegoating them, and we have a real need for real change. We need sleep to be legal. That's a basic human right. We need to double the minimum wage. We need rent control. We need jobs. And we need to really address the problems at hand. And it's really sad that tonight that's not going to happen. A lot of people were expecting a small crumb for the legalization of sleep.
This is totally on the item that's coming up next.
It actually is...
You've got 3 minutes. I'm letting them go.
It's actually connected.
Sorry.
But hey, I'll talk about it more later.
I'm Flower Hopkins, and I want to talk now about the homeless issue because I might have to leave early.
You realize then you won't talk later on these.
Right, okay. Bye. Health is wealth, and enlightened beings all say that the well-being of one person on the planet affects everyone else's well-being. The point of Hemingway's book, For Whom the Bell Tolls, is that when the death bell tolls for one, person, it tolls for everyone. People can't stay healthy without sleep. Sick people die. I have some chronic health conditions that cold weather and fatigue, you know, having to stay up late at night, make worse. And those conditions also heighten the pain of my physical condition. But fortunately, I have a home. And I'm very thankful that I have a home because I know I couldn't stand online in the cold and rain when I was tired and sick for half an hour or longer to get into an interfaith satellite shelter van. And in the past, when I was homeless, I stayed at the River Street shelter. But I think everyone should be aware that it's hard to get into the shelter. I mean, I had a caseworker help me get in times when I was sick, but there's a waiting list, and it's only a temporary shelter. I believe that everyone should be able to sleep outdoors, like whenever they need to sleep.
Thank you. Next speaker. Roxanne, I need to check to see if other people want to speak first. Cause
I
you
did
spoke.
Check, but go ahead. I really did try.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. Fine. Thank you.
Roxanne Kispache. I wanted to just talk to you tonight during this oral communication about the fact that I would really like to see the return of a user-friendly downtown. I see all the great big buildings that are going up that are supposed to revitalize the downtown. But I think that there are some really serious problems, and I don't think that you can revitalize our downtown by just putting up newer buildings. I really believe it would increase the fortune of the downtown merchants to begin to value the local citizens. During the redevelopment campaign against the beach flats, one of the local merchants stated that the merchants, really don't need the locals to stay in business, that the tourists are really their bread and butter, and it kind of shows often. Many of the harsh things that were said against the beach flats residents by marinis, the boardwalk employees, the Downtown Business Association, and many others. And yet, these local residents spend their money locally. I mean, often a lot of the local residents that were being kind of spoken against don't have cars, but downtown is what is closest to them. I've heard business after business that has folded in the 10 years that I've been here, blamed on all kinds of different things. The homeless that hung out in front of their store, people who don't know quality and or appreciate good service. The scapegoating goes on year after year, and again, it's at its height with this homeless issue coming up. But the truth behind all these excuses is really more like this, and I shop downtown, I know. People go elsewhere because of store workers who stay on personal phone calls rather than wait on you, that are certainly unhelpful because they're only earning minimum wage and they're really not happy at their jobs. Prices double and triple anywhere else in the city for the same items. No restrooms for anyone, no singing, no sitting, no dogs, no smiles, and no welcome. If the merchants think that we're just going to breeze in, drop our cash, and zoom out, and go potty elsewhere, and smile and talk elsewhere, fine. But that's really not what we're going to do. And one thing about the box stores, they do make sure that their help is trained and smiling to everyone. The dress I have on tonight is a $100 dress, bought at a local downtown merchant's when I was working two jobs. It probably doesn't look like a $100 dress. Probably none of you would even wear it. But I'm telling you that when I spend my money, now I take care of things. I've had it 3 years, but I bought two when I was in the money. And, you know, when I leave my yard from gardening and run downtown to Palace Arts for art supplies or whatever, I'm sure I don't look like the kind of person who would ever have any money to spend. I will say to you that just like the Beach Hill residents who said that the Beach Flats residents never come into their area, and Jane Bear, who's so astute, said, how do they know who are Beach Flats residents? I will tell you that the downtown merchants and the downtown association don't know who the homeless are. You don't know. Nobody wears signs. You can't assume things. So I would really like to see, you know, a downtown with restrooms again and things. And if downtown...
Your time is up.
Well, anyway, with redevelopment money, if it's not revitalized,
Okay.
Hello, my name is Norma Tasker. I have to say I haven't been here for a few meetings because I was very disappointed in some of the things that went on in appointing people to commissions. I have.
Look out, from your schoolroom window. Look up, young children, from your play. Wave your hand at the shining airplane. Such a beautiful sight as the Enola Gay. It's many miles from the Utah desert to an island far away. A standing guard by the barbed wire fences that hide the secret of Enola Gay. High above the clouds, in the sunlit silence, so peaceful here, I'd like to stay. There's many a pilot who would swap his pension for a chance to fly Enola Gay. What is that sound? High above my city, I rush outside and search the sky. Now we are running to find the shelters. The air raid sirens start to cry. What will I say when the children ask me, where was I flying upon that day? With trembling voice, I gave the order to the bombardier of Enola Gay. Look out, from your schoolroom window. Look up, young children, from your play. Your bright young eyes will turn to ashes in the blinding light of Enola Gay. I turn to see the fireball rising. My God, all I can say. I hear a voice within me crying. My mother's name was Enola Gay. Look out, from your schoolroom window. Look up, young children, each one is named Enola Gay.
And that's the ever-present David Rovick's Enola Gay from his album Make It So. Hey, you can give us a call in and make the show a little more than so-and-so or so-so. 427-3772 is our number, 427-FRSC here. You're tuned to 96.3 FM, Bathrobe's Pier, Broadsides. I'm an old Bathrobe's Pier. No bathrobe, but definitely got the broadsides here, so give us a call, 427-3772. Now, a little more from the February 1999 Council Meeting on Oral Communications. Again, around the sleeping ban, prior to the actual sleeping ban debate, which actually took about 2 hours of public comment, probably the longest public hearing, maybe Borders was longer after that. Really a lot of eloquent speakers, a lot of information. And the situation has not changed because of what the City Council is likely to do on Tuesday, which will restore the right of homeless people to sleep in yards and business parking lot vehicles, although that will affect only a small percentage of homeless people. We're going to be back in 1999, where we were when this testimony was given. And this is in February of 1999. You heard previously some comments by Crone in March of 99. This is a month before, and it's commentary, I guess. First there's Jim Costner, then there's me talking at the oral communications line on issues that are going to be quite familiar to some and rather familiar to others.
I think it was Mark Addato.
Yeah, it's Mark Addato.
Mark Addato, yeah.
Yes, go ahead.
My name is James Michael Costner, and I'm a citizen of Santa Cruz. And I just want to bring up the fact that we live in a society that is American capitalism, that is founded on the genocide of Native people, that is founded in the enslavement of African people, which stole half of Mexico in the 1840s, which has plundered millions of people throughout the globe, which offed 2 million people in Vietnam, which offed 1 million Cambodians, which has killed tens of thousands of Haitians over the last 80 years, which has killed millions of Rasa over the last couple hundred years, which has killed millions of Natives and Africans over the last 500 years. This empire that we're living in has duped many of us and has us convinced that it's the most progressive society on the planet. If you study your history, you'll actually find out this is the most hypocritical nation in all pages of history. And the reality is the freedom fighters today inside this society are actually targeted and oppressed. Meanwhile, fascists are actually rewarded. Fascists are actually applauded and called heroes. Meanwhile, truth seekers are actually spit upon. Meanwhile, we're told you have to earn the right to live, when the reality is we have a right to live because we're human, because we're here, because we're alive. The fact is that American society is actually evil and wicked, and cooperation with it is evil and wicked. And the reality is one day people throughout the whole planet will rise, will unify, and will understand what's necessary in order to bring about human rights for everybody. And the city council before me will have to take part in that struggle, because you are representatives, and you will be pushed out of office if you don't represent the people of this community and all of us. And we will organize, and we will unify, and we will do everything that's necessary to free up everybody.
Councilmembers, later tonight we will be talking about institutionalized hate crimes and the happy face that the City Council is putting on its latest cosmetic makeover of the infamous city sleeping ban, sleep crime laws. You'll be hearing plenty from me on that subject. But one group you'll not be hearing from much tonight is the homeless themselves. They won't be here and still be able to keep their floor space at the Armory, because the Homeless Servitude Center has been unable or unwilling to arrange a pickup for them at 10 o'clock p.m. in the most important debate, I would say, in 20 years. Most homeless people, if they want to avoid the troll busters and the midnight move-alongs from the police, need to line up at 4 p.m. to go to the Armory. The next morning, they are rousted, ousted, and dumped at 4:30 a.m. into the freezing cold. So homeless people, those who hurry and wait like rats in the Santa Cruz winter shelter maze, which, of course, closes down on March 15th, won't be a part of this public comment. Theirs are the absent voices. Last Monday, I visited the Armory to help a client and a monitor who needed a late night ride, to get some hot soup up to the homeless there, who normally get nothing to eat while they stay there, and to ask some questions about the vicious beatings that have sent numerous homeless people to the hospital for stitches in their face when they were kicked awake by self-proclaimed trollbusters. So rigid was the control system up there that Sugar and John, the two Armory monitors, demanded I leave on threat of arrest and close the door on the homeless man I transported up there. And I did not raise my voice once. I do a twice-weekly radio show on 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz, and I will be airing more about this issue 6 to 8 p.m. on Thursday and 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. on Sunday, if anyone wishes to listen. I was treated rudely at the Armory, but I had a place to go. We had to throw out some perfectly good soup, and there's more of it outside tonight if any of you are hungry, any of you in the audience as well. But worse were the hungry people that were left behind. Reports of brutal attacks on homeless people continue to come in, and reports of homeless people banding together defensively to repel these assaults. When you see a man or a woman with a sleeping bag walking around with her eyes blackened or stitches in her head, ask, who attacked? Was it because they were sleeping outside? Has the police department found the culprits? Have they increased patrols in the dangerous areas? Has the city council taken the emergency action to set up some safety zone for those under siege? For many in the San Francisco Bay Area, these are mean times, with turncoats like Mayor Whitewash Willie Brown and Mayor Queen of Mean Shirley Dina Berkeley backing anti-homeless sweeps and banishment from public spaces. It seems that as liberal politicians drift back to their upper middle class white constituencies, homeless people, poor people, re-enter. Those committed to social justice will have to rely on themselves. I'm sorry, that renters, a check away from the streets, and those committed to social justice will have to rely on themselves and not the empty wait-and-see promises of those who got to power mouthing compassionate rhetoric.
Your time is up.
For those of you who weren't around for the civil rights struggle of the 50s and the 60s, there are new struggles needed now for the 90s. Tickets, marches, boycotts are the first step to remove the stigma of shame and anti-homeless bigotry that curses our community. Thank you.
And there I am mouthing off at the mic in February of 1999, probably saying more pertinent stuff than I am now, although it's just as pertinent now as it was then, just as true. And, of course, there were lots of people in that room, and that maybe is the point of optimism, although also a point of pessimism. There were dozens and dozens of people packing the chamber on that February night in 1999, and indeed a month later in March of 99, when Catherine Byers and her city council colleagues gave the final burial to any changes in the sleeping ban and engaged and essentially sidelined activism by establishing a homeless issues task force that we allowed to distract us instead of doing the kinds of protesting and organizing that we needed to do independently. Hopefully now we've learned better. Hopefully now we've gotten to a different stage, but we'll see. And I encourage people to give a call to HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, if they want to volunteer in an upcoming effort to end the sleeping ban that will be hopefully better organized, that will be better planned, and that will be not even undertaken in a significant way unless we have the critical mass. The number to call if you're interested is 423-4833, 423-HUF, as many of you already know. Very specifically, I'm going to read now the staff report for the City Council agenda item that's coming up this Tuesday, since folks are probably interested in it. You can go to the library and read it as well. It's not online, because I don't think it's online. It may be online, actually. But I'm going to read it anyway. It's short. The recommendation of this is that the City Council introduce for publication an ordinance amending 6.36020 of the Santa Cruz Municipal Code pertaining to camping. Background. In the course of considering the most recent camping ordinance amendments, a question was raised regarding amendments made in 99 pertaining to the three-day limit applying to the exemption provisions in subsection D of the camping ordinance. And actually, the more I look at this, the less comprehensible it's going to be to you unless you see the ordinance in front of you. But what it does is it strikes two sentences from the current law as the current law exists after it was changed about two weeks ago in City Council. It strikes, no particular location shall be used for camping under this provision for more than 3 days during any one calendar month. That's the sentence. No particular location shall be used for camping under this provision for more than 3 days during any one calendar month from the section that allows camping in the yard of a residence with the consent of the owner or occupant of the residence, where the camping is in the rear yard, or in an area of the side yard or front yard that is separated from view from the street by a fence, hedge, or other obstruction. So no longer can you only camp 3 days in a yard. You can, as we had assumed before January, camp 30 days. And finally, from Section 3, the same sentence is struck that allows you, inside of a licensed and registered motor vehicle in the parking lot of the site of a business institution in a non-residential district, with the written consent of both the business institution and property owner, where the driver occupant of such a vehicle is in possession of a valid driver's license, provided that no more than two vehicles shall be permitted in any one location. Again, the three-day limit is struck. So we're back to where we were in 99. The three-day limit is on for driveways only. Everybody else on private property has the right to put you up for as long as they want, provided that there are no significant complaints. I mean, there's other provisions that also restrict you from being in a backyard or side yard or in a business parking lot or in a church parking lot, for that matter. And this section is what that is that prohibits that. Camping shall not be permitted under this subsection where it is conducted in such a manner as to create noise, inadequate sanitation, or other matters offensive to persons of ordinary sensibility, nor where the camping is of such frequency, intensity, or duration as to constitute a use of land prohibited by any provision of Title 24 of this code, nor where the camping activity will be prohibited under any provision of this code concerning use of mobile homes, nor where any fee, charge, or any other monetary consideration is collected for the privilege of camping or for any services or the use of any facilities related thereto, nor where the covenants, conditions, and restrictions of a duly organized homeowners association would prohibit the activity in the residential area subject to the covenants, conditions, and restrictions. And this is nothing new. This is all old stuff. And that's the problem. We're taking a lot of time, the council is, that is, discussing old stuff instead of getting on to the new stuff that needs to be dealt with. particularly as the weather turns nasty out there, and the April 15th, and it's not March 15th, that was in 99, it's April 15th, the armory's open longer this year. When the armory closes, there'll be 60 to 100 more people out on the streets. Essentially, again, that's a drop in the bucket, because there's 1,000 to 2,000 out there now in the city alone, is the estimate. So, something needs to be done. We need to end the sleeping ban. And we'll be talking more about that at the Huff meeting on Wednesday at Baker's Square. That's at 1107 Ocean, the restaurant on Ocean Street, two or three blocks from the freeway. Come on down, 8:30 a.m. on Wednesday morning. Or if you can't make that, come to Huff UCSC. That's up on campus at 6 o'clock on the second floor of the Student Center. Just go to the second floor, turn left. I guess it's head for the third world room on the second floor of the Student Center. So, I actually have an agenda, and again, you can get your own agenda for the upcoming City Council meeting. There isn't a great deal on it that I've noticed, and I haven't had any legal eagles. If there are any of you out there who want to be a legal eagle on the issue of the upcoming City Council agenda, call me so I can advise the community, or you can advise the community. There's a liability claim by Kevin Clark. He's trying to get money from the city for he was a low-income auto renter. He rented autos until he was forced out by the city that turned his parking lot over to the Nickelodeon. I guess they were going to, but then they didn't. That was up by the old theaters, the old movie theaters that used to be near the drop-in center along Front Street. He is claiming some damages, and it's not clear how much he's claiming. There's an engineering consultant who wants $123,000 on the consent agenda. There's bunches of money being transferred on the consent agenda, stuff that I used to talk about, but that in order to stop me from talking, City Council moved the consent agenda, only my discussion of it, mind you, to the end of the entire session. That's not entirely true. It's when I got up for the first item for me to talk, everything that on the consent agenda was moved to the end of the session. And that, of course, is clearly a violation of the right to participate in a public meeting, or the Brown Act, as it's called. However, lamentably, it was done unanimously by the City Council way back in January. We have an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Robert, Ed.
Hey, Ed.
I forgot to mention, John Trudell, you know, is going to be here Thursday at Rio at 6 o'clock.
And who's he?
John Trudell, poet, ex-AIM member.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he's wonderful. 6 o'clock, the door's open, and I got my ticket down at Streetlight Records.
Uh-huh.
You haven't heard of him?
You know, I think I actually have heard the name.
Yeah, you have.
It doesn't ring a bell in terms of, you know, anything he's done, but that's yeah. He's a poet who's a former American Indian Movement person.
Right. His wife and family were murdered, his little children, probably by the government for speaking out, burning flags. This is years ago.
Uh-huh.
A very interesting person. Anyway, and I'll be there Wednesday at the Huff meeting. Also, too, that fucking barrage that you did, that Costner just gave the City Council on that tape, and then you back-to-back, that was beautiful.
Well, thanks.
Bye, Robert.
Bye-bye.
And that's one of our Homes on Wheels people, Ed Howes. Actually, homeless people do occasionally listen into this show. It's impressive. Thanks, Ed, for calling in. Call-in number is 427-3772. And I am going to read now a speech which I promised I'd read earlier, which some of you may have already heard, and it is called A Prayer for America by Representative Dennis Kucinich, and it was given on February 17th. And it's not about homelessness in Santa Cruz, but it's about the war and the repression across the country, the Bush War situation. And it's the first time that a representative in Congress has really spoken up in this way, even though Barbara Lee did vote against the resolution way back in September. Still, this is a very well-reasoned, passionate, and eloquent appeal, and I'm going to read it. I offer these brief remarks today as a prayer for our country, with love of democracy, as a celebration of our country, with love for our country, with hope for our country, with the belief that the light of freedom cannot be extinguished as long as it is inside of us, with the belief that freedom rings resoundingly in a democracy each time we speak freely, with the understanding that freedom stirs the human heart and fear stills it, with the belief that a free people cannot walk in fear and faith at the same time, with the understanding that there is a deeper truth expressed in the unity of the United States that implicate in the union of our country is the union of all people, that all people are essentially one, that the world is interconnected not only on the material level of economics, trade, communication, and transportation, but interconnected through human consciousness, through the human heart, through the heart of the world, through the simply expressed impulse and yearning to be and breathe free. I offer this prayer for America. Let us pray that our nation will remember that the unfolding of the promise of democracy in our nation paralleled the striving for civil rights. That is why we must challenge the rationale of the Patriot Act. And the Patriot Act, of course, is Bush's law imposing draconian and unprecedented restrictions on people and giving the police unusual powers. We must ask, why should America put aside guarantees of constitutional